Monitor. And I hope that each listener has personal reasons to share this song this year. It was a very good year. Sounding off on monitor. And I'm Jim Lowe on a Saturday night in September. They're the best kind. So let's go straight ahead. Because we got to travel on. Some traveling music for Glenn Campbell, please.
Well, I've laid around and I've played around this old town too long. Well, summer's almost gone. Yes, the winter's coming on. Well, I've laid around and I've played around this old town too long. And I feel just like I've got to travel on. Well, I want to see my baby. Well, I want to see her bad. Well, I want to see her bad. Yes, I've got to see her bad. I want to see my baby. Well, I want to see her bad. She's the best gal this poor boy ever had. Well, Papa writes to Johnny, but Johnny can't come home. No, Johnny can't come home. I said, my Johnny can't come home. Papa writes to Johnny, but Johnny can't come home, cause he's been on that chain gang too long. Well, the high sheriff and the police, well, they're riding after me. Well, they're riding after me. Everybody's coming after me. The high sheriff and the police, well, they're riding after me. And I feel just like I've got to travel on. This old town too long. Oh, well, summer's almost gone. Yes, winter's coming on. Well, I've laid around and I've played around this old town too long. And I feel just like I've got to travel on. Well, I said I've laid around and I've played around this old town too long. And I feel just like I've got to travel on.
Monitor listeners know we've been keeping an eye on Gulfport, Mississippi, one of the town's hardest hit by the late and unlamented Hurricane Camille. We want to know how the town and its people are fighting back from the almost total destruction left in the storm's wake. Dr. John Russell is a newcomer to Gulfport, having come there only 6 years ago from Milton, Massachusetts. Dr. Russell was everywhere during the week of the storm. Working 18 hours a day, he treated more than 1,500 patients, delivered several babies, and instead of collecting from his patients, he often reached into his own pocket to help them out. All this while his own home and office were almost washed away, and his wife and four daughters were trapped in different parts of the area. Dr. Russell's waiting to speak to us now on Monitor's Open Line. Dr. Russell, first of all, our congratulations on a superb effort, both as a doctor and as a good neighbor.
Well, thank you very much. I think that just about everybody in the communities did just as much, if not more.
Are you and your wife and the children all together now?
Yes, we are. We're living in a one-room back room right now while the house is being repaired.
How about immediate things like a roof over the head now, meals, clothes for the kids? Has it become a more expensive outlay than before?
No, I don't think it's more expensive. However, it is more difficult to obtain. The prices remain pretty much the same. It's a question of where is the money coming from. If one doesn't have a job or an income, it's fine to have the same price to put a roof over one's head as yesterday. However, one doesn't have the money that one had yesterday.
I understand you left Milton, Massachusetts because you said you couldn't stand another New England snowstorm.
Yes, that's right. One day, shoveling out, I think, my third snowstorm, and I had never been in a warm climate, and just put my shovel away, went into my wife and said, "Honey," I said, "let's move south." And she said, "Okay," just like that. We were going to go to California, the land of milk and honey, and we stopped off at Gulfport en route, and the town was just so delightful, and the people were lovely that we just looked at it and stayed.
Do you think you'll be leaving Gulfport because of hurricanes?
Not ever. I would never leave Gulfport. All credit to the rest of the country, and I know all of our country is fine, but I think Gulfport is just about paradise. The people, the tempo, the climate. I just am extremely happy here. I don't believe our family has ever been happier anywhere else.
Doctor, you know, in the 6 years you've been down there, you may not be aware, but you have picked up just the suggestion of a southern accent.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Well, thank you, Dr. Russell. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Dr. John Russell of Gulfport, Mississippi. And I guess there's one thing the hurricanes will just have to learn. They can blow down homes and offices, but they can never blow away the one thing which really makes a town live, the courage and spirit of its people.
See how the sun is running out of the sky. Turn one more page now. Gone by. Another night, then another day, melting one into one, till the world is done. To be blind is the state of mind in confusion, but I'm facing reality whenever I face the inside of me. Holding on to a love
Vicki Carr. Hawaii celebrates its 10th anniversary as our 50th state this year, and here's a monitored quiz about one of its principal industries. To which one of these fruit families does the pineapple belong? Apple, berry, or citrus? The juicy answer in a moment, here on the Monitor Beacon. WNBC, this is the place for music, news, weather, and me. WNBC, right here, this is the place for fortune phone, and me. WNBC, this is the place for you and me, Big Wilson, weekdays 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
This is Anthony of Anthony and the Imperials. If you ever thought you could listen to music like this over and over and never stop, well, you've got lots of company. And that's the attitude of nurses in the Air Force Reserve. They never stop. They serve their country 24 hours a day when they're on the job. And if you're a nurse, look into the Air Force Reserve now. Contact your nearest Air Force Reserve unit.
WNBC, Radio 660. New York. Aloha. Happy 10th anniversary to the state of Hawaii. Boing, 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 boing. I'm Jim Lowe. And here's the answer to Monitor's pineapple problem. Is the pineapple a member of the apple or berry or citrus family? If you said citrus, you're wrong. If, however, you said apple, you're also wrong. It's a berry. You'd have known that if you lived in Greenfield, Iowa, I suppose. That's the town that decided to give up smoking for a month. And berry eating, gum chewing, thumb sucking, and just plain agony were some of the substitutes. Here's a report from Monitor's Bob Callan on the now-ended experiment.
It all started when the Iowa town of Greenfield was picked as the location for the filming of the movie Cold Turkey. It's the story of a town that is offered $25 million if all its residents quit smoking. Even though the story is fictional, Greenfield citizens decided to put the stop smoking idea into actuality. And the Cold Turkey campaign started August 8th with 359 persons signing a pledge to stop smoking for 30 days. Their period of trial by fire, or really the lack of it, ended last Monday. The mayor of Greenfield, Dale Yount, gave up his usual six cigars a day for the Cold Turkey pledge, and he says a survey shows that a total of 134 persons lived up to their promise.
It was 39% of the people who signed pledges to quit smoking that have actually absolutely quit and smoked none, according to our survey. There are 5% of the total that has smoked one cigarette, two cigarettes a day, something like this, and we think that this is real good results. We didn't expect 100%. In fact, we didn't think that we probably would get this large a percent.
Smoking materials were not banned in the town during the campaign, but those businesses that sold smokes were asked to cover their wares while Cold Turkey was in effect. Now that it's all over, they say sales are back to normal. This is Bob Cowan reporting for Monitor.
You won't hear Bing Crosby, Jerry Stiller, or Johnny Nash in Marrakesh Express, but you will hear Crosby, Stiller, and Nash.
Looking at the world through the sunset in your eyes. Traveling the trains to clear the rock and sky. Ducks and pigs and chickens call. Animals cross it wall to wall. American ladies 5 foot tall and sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind. Had to get away to see what we could find. Hope the birds would fly ahead, bring us back to where they led. Listen up to what they said to you. Did you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Did you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train. All on board the train. I've been
saving all my money just to take you there. I smell the garden in your hair. Take the train to Casablanca going south. Blowing smoke rings from the corners of my clothes. Busting hand in the air. Johnny Cobra's in the square. Strike your leathers, we can wear at home. Well, let me hear you now. Did you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Did you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Did you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? We're riding on the Marrakesh Express. They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train. All on board the train.
All on board. Now, Capitol Hill Monitor, a series of political and personal profiles prepared by Paul Duke of NBC News. Ever hear of a congressman who isn't looking for credits? Well, you're about to, among other things.
Congressman Jonathan Bingham is waging a one-man crusade against unsolicited credit cards. And the reason is he was socked for a $14 bill for a credit card sent by a bank, a card he didn't want and never used. He wrote the bank, but the only thing that happened was the computer tacked interest onto the $14. He finally did get matters squared away, but the sour taste lingers.
As I was having this fruitless correspondence with a bank I didn't know, I felt like someone in a Kafka novel battling against an inhuman monster. And I think that there's something about our life today that is... It has this aspect that we are succumbing to the machine in many respects. So I think this business of unsolicited credit cards is a little more significant than meets the eye.
Bingham also is one of the foremost backers of legislation to abolish the Electoral College in favor of a system of choosing the president by direct popular vote, a bill that's expected to clear the House on Monday.
Well, I think that is a very poor way for electing a president, to vote state by state, with each state casting one vote and so on. It's a poor system. It's a dangerous system. It's undemocratic. And fortunately, we haven't had to rely on it too often.
Bingham was born in Connecticut, the son of the late Republican Senator Hiram Bingham, a conservative. Son Jonathan not only is a Democrat, but a liberal Democrat.
I have six brothers, and we've split pretty evenly on this. I think we represent a pretty fair range of political opinion. I was one of those that went over to the liberal side, and I think the influence on me was the influence of Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal, and the fact that I was impressed that he seemed to be trying to do something about the getting us out of a depression, and the Republicans were just wringing their hands.
When he finished Yale, Bingham decided to take a cross-country trip one summer, working on a Mississippi River boat and doing other odd jobs.
In Omaha, I sold stockings door-to-door. And for a while, I went on living outdoors and wherever I could find a place to sleep. In those days, I don't know if it's still possible, but you could ask to spend the night in the local jail, and they would give you a bed just on the condition that you'd get out of town in the morning.
He was elected to the House in 1965, but now the 55-year-old Bingham has his eye on the Senate and may seek the Democratic senatorial nomination from New York next year.
I will seek the opportunity if it comes along to make a race for the Senate. I haven't made any decision about next year. There are lots of variables in the situation. But I'm clear that this is a goal that I have and that I would like to pursue if opportunity offers.
Democratic Representative Jonathan Bingham of New York City, who hopes to follow in his father's footsteps by moving to the Senate. This is Paul Duke for Monitor on Capitol Hill.
From the Monitor Sports Desk. The Pro Football Hall of Fame today inducted five former football greats at Canton, Ohio. 3,000 onlookers watched as Joe Perry, Leo Nomellini, Ernie Stotner, Earl Greasy Neal, and Albert Glenn Turk Edwards joined the ranks of 34 other Hall of Fame members. Wide receiver Roy Jefferson was reinstated by the Pittsburgh Steelers of the NFL. Jefferson was suspended for missing a bed check on Thursday in Montreal, where the Steelers beat the New York Giants 17-13 that night. Ali Sherman didn't exactly benefit from that evening himself. And one exhibition game, Green Bay 38, Atlanta 24. Did you hear about that experiment the state police began this week in several eastern states? They stop suspect motorists and have them blow up balloons so they can scientifically check the alcohol content of their breath. One cop seemed a little disappointed. So far, he said, nothing but bad breath. Sorry about that, officer. Why don't you arrest them for reckless breathing? Words to remember, manamana. The monitor station to remember if you're in northeast Wisconsin is WNFL Green Bay. And since it's Green Bay, guess what that NFL stands for, right? One of eight monitor stations in the Badger State. You can keep in touch with all our stations in every state with the NBC Listening Guide. It's free. Write to Monitor, NBC, New York, zip code 10020. I'm Jim Lowe, and here are some more words to remember. Inflation, deflation, or that most troubling economic situation of all, just plain inflation, well, stick around. There's a man coming along who may be able to soothe your worries. Right now, Renee and Renee have their own soothing remedy.
Love is for the two of us. Love is for the two of us. Love is always new to us. Love is just the two of us. Thank you. right for just the two of us. One moon, right for just the two of us.
Inflation. You may not be able to get an insurance policy against it, but an interesting new policy of the insurance industry may play an important role in getting many of us back on the right track. Monitor's Ron Pobuda, not to be confused with Ron Swoboda, who hit a Grand Slam home run for the Mets today. Ron Pobuda spoke about it with the chairman of the board of the State Mutual Life Assurance Company of America, H. Ladd Plumley.
Mr. Plumley, I think historically that insurance companies have been considered aloof from the rest of the country and its problems. That image does seem to be changing. Are insurance companies becoming involved?
Yes, Ron. As a matter of fact, of course, we believe we have always been involved. But I think our eyes are opened to new areas in which we can move. Perhaps symbolic of our interests is the $2 billion pledge of life insurance companies to invest in the ghetto areas, invest in housing, invest in more jobs. This is but a symbol, but we have lots of other things we're doing too.
How is this going to help the economy today? How is it going to confront the problems which all of us are faced with, rich, middle class, and poor as well?
Well, one of the areas, of course, is we're moving into so-called venture areas of capital. We are moving into different geographical areas. We are moving into investing in perhaps small businesses, into franchises, into the various areas where people before have thirsted for capital but haven't known quite where to look. We're interested in them.
Supposing insurance companies didn't exist or their effectiveness was completely annihilated, what would happen to our economy? Where would it go?
Ron, the life insurance companies of the United States have the greatest pool of long-term capital for investment of any institutions in the whole world. If for any reason, and it will never happen, but if for any reason this were shut off, our economy would grind to a halt in weeks or months.
That's a definitive statement.
This is an absolutely definitive statement.
Mr. Plumley, there's inflation, taxes are high, people are upset. Generally, what are we going to do? What are insurance companies going to do?
One of the first things that insurance companies have done, and it seems to me this is what all businesses ought to do, is to manage their own affairs in the best way possible. It may surprise you a little bit, Ron, to learn that over a period of 20 years, for all life insurance companies, the average charge made for $1,000 worth of life insurance, instead of going up like almost every other commodity you would name, has gone down 16%. We happen to be in the business where computers can do the most effective work possible. We are figure people, so that we've kept down the cost. This flows out and benefits every single person.
Well, let's simplify it. I talked to a man not too long ago who said that he bought a $10,000 insurance policy in 1913, and he thought it would protect himself and his family 50 years from now, and it certainly didn't. What can a man do today to make sure that his dollar is going to be worth a dollar in buying power 20, 30, 50 years from now?
The most important thing a man can do, it seems to me, falls into three parts. In the first place, let's have him buy this $10,000. Irrespective of what the dollar worth, he's got that. The next thing, have him buy a variable annuity. This will take care of a great deal of the inflation, and I would recommend he invest in a mutual fund. His first three steps in the economic progress of his family. All these are coming under the aegis of the modern life insurance company.
All right, but Mr. Plumlee, what will be the future role of insurance companies?
I think we're going to get closer to the consumer. I think we're going to provide total financial services. I think we are going to be in the shopping center. I think we're going to have insurance clinics with a big parking lot where they can go and they can get all the protection and all the varying lines that the family needs.
Mr. Plumlee, most interesting. Thank you very much for being our guest today on NBC's Monitor.
Down that muddy Mississippi line. Here's a Monitor Going Places quiz, just to remind you that next Saturday we begin a two-weekend report on fall and winter vacations. How many states would you have to visit to see these tourist attractions? The Grand Canyon, the Painted Desert, the Petrified Forest, and Carlsbad Caverns. We'll guide you to the answer in a moment here on the Monitor Beacon. Hello again, Jim Lowe again, with the answer to Monitor's Going Places quiz. How many states would you have to visit to see the Grand Canyon, the Painted Desert, the Petrified Forest, and Carlsbad Caverns? You'd have to visit two states, Arizona and New Mexico. The canyon, the desert, and the forest are all in Arizona. Song that's going places. It was a Monitor pick and has been on the popularity charts ever since. It's Gene, and it's Oliver singing.
Jean, Jean, roses are red. All the leaves have gone green, and the clouds are so low, you can touch them, and so come out to the meadow, Jean. Jean, Jean, you're young and alive. Come out of your half dream, dream, and run, if you will, to the top of the hill. Open your arms, Bonnie Jean, till the sheep in the valley come home my way, till the stars all around me and find me alone, when the sun comes a-singing, I'll still be waiting for Jean, Jean. The hills are ablaze with the moon's yellow haze. Come into my arms, Bonnie Jean. Jean, you're young and alive. Come out of your half dream, dream. If you will, to the top of the hill, come into my arms, Bonnie Jean.
The conversation that singer Shaney Wallace had with monitor Shirley Eder recently couldn't stay away from the subject that seems to preoccupy most of us these days, the high cost of living. The girls gave it a good going over, but they also found a few other things to talk about, too.
Shaney, everything costs a lot of money today. It's very expensive to live. I know you made a lot of money in Oliver, but I'm sure you have to economize somewhere. We all do.
Oh, yes, most definitely, especially, you see, with my husband looking at me with that glare in his eyes all the time, like, you mustn't spend too much, which I am capable of doing. I love
your husband's also your manager, Bernie.
Yes,
Rich, let's say.
Yes, yes. Well, he has to look after the money. So, anyway, when we came back from Oliver, we had a new house. And I wanted to go man it. I wanted to spend. I bought antiques in London. I bought silver. And, of course, the place looks beautiful, but then Bernie looked at the bank account, and it was in such a state. I mean, he said, look, we just land up with nothing. So we had to get some kind of a system going. So now, between the accountant and Bernie and myself, how I save money is by putting a certain percentage away. We put a certain percentage away in a personal account for a rainy day, and then 20% at least away for taxes.
You do put that away?
At least. Well, you have to, because otherwise you get walloped at the end of the year and you just don't, you know, there's no way to meet it.
After Arva, did your life change economically?
No, not at all. Absolutely not at all. The only way it did change economically, I think, is the fact of the premieres. And I went specially to have clothes made for each premiere, the one in London, the one in New York, and so on and so forth. But apart from that, not at all, because I've always tried to have nice clothes. I've always tried to be presentable.
Shaney Wallace, you travel the country with Jack Benny. You share the bill with Jack Benny in concert. You've been sharing it in Vegas. And he is known, I mean, he makes himself known as the tightwad of all time. Is he?
Oh, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. In fact, he must have an overhead that is unbelievable. He's got his writer on the road. He has his manager on the road. The stage manager was with us. Of course, he had to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
Three girls in the show besides. Now, you figure whatever he's earning, by the time everybody's been paid, I don't think it can be too good.
How about when you go out to dinner, or does he give gifts? Does he give...
I tell you what he gave me. He gave me his old violin. Signed. And he uses these old special violins. So I said, you've got to give me one of those and sign it. And I'm going to put it on my bar. I just adore him.
He's a delight.
And he does, and he takes us out when we go out for a meal or something. He treats us all, you know.
See, he's not such a skimp like that. No. But one last thing now. Do you find that it is difficult saving money today?
Yes, absolutely. To me, of course, in my personal life, it's my home. I love my home, and... with the home and the business, you know, the business side of it, the overhead is exorbitant. The mind boggles when you think how much you have to come up with per month to cover everything. And when you have, and you've put your 20% aside for the tax, and you've put your little bit away, and I mean a little bit for a rainy day, there's just, where there's nothing left at all. Everybody has the same problem. We all have to pay our tax. We all have the problem of high prices. And I don't think anybody's any different in any walk of life.
Jenny Wallace, thank you very much.
Thank you, Shirley.
Now, if a checking balance were as easy to approach as a song, Shaney Wallace could wipe out the national debt before anyone could say, I owe you. And she'd make it seem the most natural thing in the world, as natural and free-flowing as this.
I called him up to tell him I was coming home. And he didn't get a chance to say a word more than hello.
Monitor, your hosts are Joe Garagiola and Durward Kirby. Go with Joe in the afternoon and forward with Durward in the evening. Right now, however, you're in the swim with Jim. Last one in's a groovy grubworm. Announcer named Harvey Wilcox. Harlow Wilcox, sure. NBC News on the hour next. I'm Jim Lowe. This is Commissioner Neil L. Moylan of the New York State Department of Commerce. The traveler who comes to New York from another state or another country and has a good time will go home and tell his friends about it. He becomes a visit New York State salesman for us in his own state or country. And he'll come back himself. That's nice, but what's the point, you might say? Well, the point is that travel is a more than $3 billion a year business in New York State. It provides many jobs and brings in a lot of dollars. It's an important part of the state's economy. The traveler who has gone home happy undoubtedly enjoyed our many and varied vacation land attractions, but he also enjoyed the people he met. Assisting a foreign or an American visitor to New York State can be richly enjoyable, can make new friends, and, not incidentally, can make the traveler feel welcome. A welcome visitor will someday be welcomed back. You can help New York State by being a helpful New Yorker.
This is the place, the Fortune Phone place, weekdays, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on WNBC, Radio 660.
NBC New York. Monitor News on the Hour. Here's William Littower.